Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Eastwood Show. It's the light side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. Broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's both fluoridated and Fukushima irradiated, and everybody has a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb on behalf of the Prime Minister John Key, former Federal Reserve banker, to help the economy. Today we have one of the big and illustrious, fabulous people that walk around the planet who actually have done an awful lot of work and research of a primary nature which can give us some insight onto how the world truly is. His name is Jan Ervin. His website is GnosticMedia.com. That's Gnostic with a G. And also, you can purchase up to, I think he's written a number of books there. One that I was particularly interested in is The Holy Mushroom, Evidence of Mushrooms in Judeo-Christianity. And he's a very well-endowed, in the media sense of the word, man. So I'd like to welcome him now. Jan, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me on.
Now, for those who are unfamiliar, would you please give us a brief background on this this book you've written, The Holy Mushroom?
Sure. Okay. Well, that's actually my second book. My first book was Astrotheology and Shamanism. That in that book, we went in and looked at the as above, so below themes between sun worship and solar worship, etc., star worship, with entheogen use or psychedelic use in the ancient religions. And this was published in 2005, and then I put it out in a second edition. And then the follow-up research to that, I had been working with John Allegro's daughter, Judith Ann Brown, and we were investigating at the time what happened to John Allegro's career and his background. And I guess I should tell people who John Allegro is. He was this famous Dead Sea Scrolls scholar that in 1970 came out and published a book called The Sacred Mushroom and the Cross, declaring that Judeo-Christianity was based on a fertility drug cult. And then he went from being immediately from being one of the most respected scholars in the academic field to one of the most mocked and ridiculed, and his career was pretty much destroyed overnight. But in the last 42 years, a number of professors and scholars from all over the world have picked up what Allegro was researching. And in my book, The Holy Mushroom, that you mentioned, what I did was I went through all of the attacks against Allegro's psychedelic and mushroom research in the Sacred Mushroom of the Cross, all of his specific ties to entheogens. And I went through line by line, and I showed that all of the attacks against his work were in fact false. And then I followed up with 40 or 42 Christian icons that explicitly show the mushroom. And then I concluded the book with an ancient primary Christian Orthodox text, the Epistle to the Renegade Bishops, that specifically discusses the quote-unquote holy mushroom. And this was the first ancient primary text that had ever been published of the quote-unquote holy mushroom, and thereby completely vindicating Allegro's work. And, you know, today we've got a number of scholars all over the place. There's Professor John Rush and Alan Piper, and there's Professor Earl Lee and Professor Carl Ruck and a number of others. Even some Italian and German scholars that have come out fully publicly endorsing Allegro's work, and furthermore showing that the conclusions by Wasson and other scholars in previous decades were completely wrong. And in fact, the attacks against Allegro's work were based entirely on fallacies. And this guy Wasson, who headed all of the attacks, in fact admitted, and he was... he was the pioneer of the field of ethnomycology, which is the study of mushrooms in religion and culture. And this guy, he is the one who launched all of the attacks against Allegro. And then so we reveal that all of the attacks against Allegro's work were in fact false. And like I said, you know, so anyway, today there is a large and ever-growing and expanding academic and independent research into this area of psychedelic drugs and Judeo-Christianity. And, you know, and it was always okay to study psychedelic drugs in other religions like Hinduism, or, you know, South American shamanism, or the Norse or whatever. But, you know, when you start investigating Judeo-Christianity, they do not like that at all, as it exposes part of the control mechanism that they use psychedelics for. And if obviously if these people are using these substances in secrecy and not dispensating that to the public, then they have an agenda there. They're occulting information. And the only reason to occult something is, you know, the word occult means hidden. And the reason why you occult something is to use it against others. And so, you know, I think this is the core reason of suppressing the research of ethnomycology and how it ties into Judeo-Christianity, and especially suppressing John Allegro's work, as it just completely blows the cover off of this whole scandal.
If John Allegro was persecuted for talking about this, I would presume you have. And I would also presume that throughout history there have been many people and cultures that have experienced suppression.
Sure. Well, I mean, you know, it's funny that you should say that. And, you know, as long as I was publishing what I, you know, and originally, you know, you see, you have to go wherever the research takes you. You don't put your conclusions first and then look for the evidence to fill that out, right? And so early on, because of this investigation into Wasson's background, I just started allowing the research to take me in the direction that it would, and that the citation showed. And so eventually that led to, after my Holy Mushroom book, I for 6 years, or no, excuse me, I published that in October 31st, 2008. So, you know, the last 4 years, I've been investigating Wasson's background. And so that just started turning up all of this stuff that wasn't known before. And so previously I had, you know, I knew there was something fishy about Wasson's background, but I didn't understand the level of trickery and mind control that was behind the psychedelic movement. So, you know, eventually this whole path of investigation led me to researching Gordon Wasson's background and discovering through, you know, see, the all of Wasson's archives are stored at Harvard University's herbaria there, which is part of the botanical museum. And they have a control on all of the information, essentially, and they don't allow anybody in who's not telling the official story. And so early on, I realized that every conversation has two sides. So Harvard would only have Wasson's side of the conversation. So why not just go to other universities where some of the people that Wasson interacted with would have their side of the conversation stored? And so sure enough, I started doing this and went through about a dozen universities and turned up about 1,000 pages of information that told a completely different side to this character Wasson that founded the field of ethnomycology and showed him. Well, eventually we found documentation primary that he was a chairman of the Council on Foreign Relations. He was also a high-level asset to the CIA, and I have personal letters between he and George Kennan where he's actually attempting to recruit George Kennan to the CIA shortly after the OSS was closed down. So, you know, and Kennan replies that some debacle with the OSS was so bad, he was pretty much done with, you know, working with the agencies. But, you know, if the DCI, which is the Director of Central Intelligence, and the president could not use Kennan's services directly, then they would have absolutely no use for his work indirectly in the CIA. So in other words, what he's saying, what he's telling Wasson is, you know what, just have the director of the CIA contact me or the president contact me directly if they need me to do a job. I don't need to work for the CIA. And so this exposes Wasson as a high-level member of the CIA. And I coincidentally, I've filed a number of Freedom of Information requests with the CIA. And one of them that came back, well, several of them came back, have Alan Dulles, the former director of the CIA, and Gordon Wasson talking about having lunch together and approving different members for this Century Club that they were all members of. It was a CIA front, and essentially Wasson and Dulles were the head guys of that.
Well, wasn't Dulles the head of the Warren Commission investigating the JFK assassination?
Oh, I don't know if he was. That's a good question. I would have to, let me pull that up, and I have a database here. I can look up real quick. So we've got the Warren Commission, and yep, he was in charge of that, as was Earl Warren, obviously the Warren Commission. Then we have Gerald Ford, Hale Boggs, and John J. McCloy. And so you are correct. And interestingly, and I should mention that I've been sick with a fever for the last couple of days and just getting over it. So if I'm a little incoherent in spots, I apologize for that.
Look at it this way, Jan. With the information that you're exposed to, even if you're running at 10% of your normal capacity, you're still 1,000% better than most people.
Well, thanks. I'm not sure if that's a very good statement for the state of affairs, though. So, you know, the idea is to raise everybody's level up.
It's difficult to find positive statements of the current state of affairs, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, you know, and that's why we put so much focus on teaching everyone the ancient classical seven liberating arts of the trivium and quadrivium, because that is actually the entire control mechanism of how this New World Order thing works and how they manipulate the media and use logical fallacies and things to manipulate people. And when people study the trivium especially, they pretty much become immune to those types of intellectual attacks and attempts at, you know, mind control, etc. And for those of your audience who don't believe they have predators, I suggest studying for 45 minutes the logical fallacies and then go turn on the mainstream media and just watch the corporate news for 10 minutes and tell me that in every segment they aren't using the entire barrage of fallacies against you. And so once you have that recognition, then you can actually begin to filter that stuff out to find the truth. And this is why they've removed the real classical seven liberating arts from the education system. This, you know, this liberal arts crap that they sell in the universities today is nothing like the ancient trivium and quadrivium, and it's a very watered down system. And the liberating arts are, as I said, the trivium and quadrivium. The trivium is grammar, logic, and rhetoric, always in that order. Grammar answers who, what, where, and when, and it's the foundation of knowledge. And logic is why, and it is the it is essentially the process of non-contradictory identification, and it gives us, well, it tells us why. It's our understanding of the pieces that we've gathered through knowledge. And then rhetoric, the final stage, is how, and that's basically what we express to others after we've collected the knowledge in the first stage, filtered the contradictions and the fallacies out in the logic or understanding in the second stage, and then express that to others like we're doing right now in the third stage. And so that is the ancient trivium. It's essentially who, what, where, when, why, and how. It's stuff that we've all been taught since, you know, first grade. And the irony is they try and make the seven liberal arts part of the universities. Well, guess what, folks? This is stuff that you are supposed to be taught in elementary school from first through eighth grade. And then by the time you were done with eighth grade, then you were considered an autodidact or a self-learner. And then you could go on and study the higher arts of the quadrivium, or you would go into the universities from there. But before the mid-1800s, they didn't even allow people into universities if you didn't first have a foundation in the classical trivium.
Is it a vetting process for having a mind that is actually worth its salt?
Sure. Yeah, you know, it's just a systematic way to always know where and how you gathered your information and the direction you came from. And then when any new information comes in, it's a systematic way to go back and compare it to the old information, check it with the old information, see if you know, the old information is valid or the new information is valid, and then be able to update yourself. And because it centers on logic in the second aspect, or the why aspect, we filter out logical fallacies. And so that way we can filter out, you know, any of the fallacies that we find in there, including the fallacious fallacy. Well, I see a fallacy, therefore it's wrong. Just spotting a fallacy doesn't make it automatically wrong. It means that you still have to go out and fact check it, even if you do spot that fallacy, but it just brings your attention to it.
Okay. Well, I think presidents are very good at that, because whenever I see a president or a prime minister speak, all I see is a phallus. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. Welcome back, everybody, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest, Jan Irvin, and he's coming off quite well, considering his physical constraints. And we were discussing over the break the implication of the man cold, where a large man will be struck with a cold of, or a flu of some righteous affliction, and will be laid up in bed and be basically absolutely desperately in need of a missus to bring it, to cook him tea and bring him hot drinks and things like that. It's happened to me. It happens to all us men. But unfortunately, Jan's missus is out of state. The poor dear. Jan, welcome back.
Thank you, sir.
Now, you've written how many books exactly?
Well, two that are published. I've got a very large two-volume interview set that I've also done called The Secret History of... Oh, what the heck is it called? Hold on a second. Grab a copy of it here. Entheogens and Consciousness, a comprehensive overview of psychedelic studies. And then I'm working on another one, The Secret History of Magic Mushrooms, that's more in the writing stage right now. This large two-volume interview set is actually mostly finished. I've just haven't found a publisher willing to take on such a large task, and that's a set of about 50 interviews that I did on my podcast with many of the leading entheogen scholars throughout the world, going into just about all of the various aspects of psychedelic or entheogenic studies. And it sort of creates a fishbowl effect over the entire field. And Inner Traditions had shown some interest in it, but they didn't think at such a large two volumes that they would sell anything. Even though, you know, I've got my own show and audience that I think would pick it up and sell it anyway. But, you know, so there's two published, three written, and another one in the works. There's probably a couple others that I've started and never finished as well.
Okay. Well, I have this memory a number of years back, Jan, when myself, my friend Will Ryan, and another friend of mine, who was also named Jan, actually, we went to a award-giving ceremony at the Auckland University, where Helen Clark, who's now number three at the UN with a $9 billion budget, is getting two honorary doctorates in law for her great achievements.
And a conversation. Okay, you cut out for a second.
Oh, sorry.
So.
Sorry, we were at the Auckland University of, and Helen Clark, the number three of the UN, was getting two honorary doctorates in law from the university, and we had this conversation about this mushroom cult, and it would appear as though many of the higher scholars that were wearing these very mushroom shaped hats. And it further went on to elaborate that during some of the colonialization of different cultures, those people who were practicing what they would call, the word is pharmacratic aspects, like using substances to do all that, was sort of pharmacratic.
Pharma being drug and kratic is ruling, so, you know, it would be... a drug ruling. But to put it in perspective for you, let me read this quote from Dr. Jolyon West, and he says, quote, "The role of drugs in the exercise of political control is also coming under increased discussion. Control can be through prohibition or supply. The total or even partial prohibition of drugs gives the government considerable leverage for other types of control. An example would be the selective application of drug laws. Against select components of the population, such members of certain minority groups or political organizations." And this is from his book published in 1975, Hallucinations, Behavior, Experience, and Theory. And, you know, so these guys are intentionally using and manipulating the drugs and the drug laws and the information about... psychedelics and the shamanic experience, and they've sort of repackaged the whole thing into neo-shamanism stuff that they've sold all the Westerners and taken out all of the dark shamanism aspects that exist in South America, etc. And so, you know, all of these things sort of play into how they manipulate the drug laws and access to the drugs to sort of control certain political groups. Now, how they would do that with, say, middle and middle upper class, mostly white people, would be to have them, you know, go down to South America, take an ayahuasca session, then they feel all spiritual, and then, you know, basically what happens then is without the trivium, people start becoming pillow sitters and positive thinkers, and it's all, and from there it all becomes, you know, everything is just fuzzy and positive, and they're not being balanced. They're not, they stop fact-checking information. They stop believing in this world, even though we have to believe in it. And they, you know, there's, if you study the the Kabbalah, there's both large face and small face, as Daniel Feldman points out in his book. And so what they've done is they've essentially gotten everyone to focus on one and not the other. They completely omit the other. Either side you look at it, you know, if you're focused on complete reality, I forget which one is which, large face or small face, but then you're missing small face. For instance, if you're completely focused on the other side, you're missing large face. Both exist simultaneously, and you have to have balance. And this is why, you know, when you get into the Kabbalah, the top three positions before you get to the crown, and I have it written down somewhere, I don't have it in front of me, but the top three positions coincide with the trivium, knowledge, understanding, and wisdom, and then you reach the crown. And so, you know, and then the triangles within the Kabbalah tree itself actually are composed of the quadrivium. That's the 5-3-4 triangle. And so we have all of these direct tie-ins right there that make it very clear that, you know, you need balance and critical thinking and fact-checking before you can reach the crown. You don't negate one for the other. You don't say, you know, well, grammar and logic, you know, that's for people who only care about, you know, the world, and they don't have any concept of what's spiritual, or, you know, they've never had a psychedelic experience or any of this kind of nonsense. It's all about balance and checking your beliefs and making sure they're valid before you pass a mental virus downstream to other people.
What kind of responsibility does that bear? Because I've always thought of teachers as being the ones who are responsible for how their students turn out. If you teach the student to not need the teacher, then the teacher is the best one of all.
Well, then the student becomes the teacher. You know, and obviously that's the whole game plan of the entire compulsory education system, is to get people to appeal constantly to false authority, to teachers, to judges, to politicians, you know, mommy and daddy government, every time they need something accomplished. You know, essentially these politicians are a bunch of clowns in Halloween costumes. You have a judge or you have a police officer. They put on a badge and a funny hat and a uniform, and then all of a sudden they go around and they do things that they would normally never, ever do under any other circumstance in life. You know, it's like, and I recommend people getting into Larkin Rose's work, but essentially the government is the world's largest religion, and the way that the government and the elites maintain control is just simply by our belief in government in itself. And government is a non-tangible belief. It doesn't exist. If you were to go out and find it, I mean, you could find a building or maybe a representative or something that you supposedly elected, but there is, you know, the idea of government is a phantom. It's just a god. It's a religion. And so what happens is these politicians get you to vote for them, and then this is what gives them their power in the first place. And supposedly, you know, we're able to give them a power that we don't have. Like, you don't have the power to go rob and steal from your next door neighbor, right? But if you put on a badge and do it in the name of government, you can show up and you can demand tax money from your neighbor. If he doesn't pay up, you beat him with a billy club and you steal his house. I mean, this is the definition of the mob. And it's all based on trickery. So, you know, the only way that the elites can even keep this whole game going is by tricking the police officers and the people, you know, that are actually part of our group, our caste, to go around and beat us up for the elites to keep us in line. So essentially, you know, it's the Stockholm syndrome. It's, you know, it's our own group that, you know, goes out, I forget the technical name for it, but, you know, that goes out and beats everybody up to get them back into line when they stand out. And, you know, and Larkin Rose covers extensively how in a voluntary society, you know, protection from home robbery and things like that exist. And, you know, in Australia, for instance, they banned everybody's guns, and then you have to appeal to mommy and daddy government to come and protect you from anything. And then you have an increase of murders and home invasion robberies and things like this. And of course, the criminals don't ever turn over their weapons. But what happens is that you give up your autonomy, your personal right and liberty to defend yourself, and you give that over to this organization that is actually there to rob you. So, you know, okay, so wait. I'm going to give up my ability to protect myself from one group of thugs to another group of thugs. Does that make any sense? They're both thugs. They both steal. Only one of them puts on a, you know, a complete puppet show every few years and gets you to vote for them, and then try, you know, and then puts on all of these religious rituals to get you to believe that they're official, and that, and then they can go around and steal from you, and then you allow it. But as soon as people wake up that government is just a religious dogma, and the second that you wake up to it and see through it, it completely vanishes. Their power over you completely disappears. You know, this is why in countries like Australia and other places, they'll actually fine people that don't vote, because, you know, this is to force the people to participate in that system, because, you know, if nobody voted, they would have zero power to do any of this stuff. And, you know, and then, of course, the question comes up, well, how would anything get done without government, without this religious illusion? Well, just ask yourself, how does anything get done anyway? By we the people. And then you wouldn't have the government stealing a third of your money. And then you would be able to, you know, donate some of your money to your local health fund or your local road fund or, you know, these things. And it's all voluntary, you know, instead of the baculum fallacy. I'm, you know, if you don't pay up, I'm going to, you know, come and kick your ass and steal your stuff.
Well, I have this feeling that we're going to shift from a Cold War to a hot war, where it will no longer be simply threats of violence that we give into. There won't even be a threat anymore. They'll just go straight into violence.
Oh, sure. Well, you know, and that's what they're trying to get at. But, you know, it's the trivium is key to prevent this from happening. And that's why it's so essential that people get out and learn and study the trivium. And it takes about 2 years for it to become fully integrated and automatic in your mind. But, you know, essentially what the trivium is it's a mental antivirus system against them, because it's their system of control. And when you learn it, you see how they manipulate and control everything, and you can protect yourself from it. And, you know, it's just the constant process of waking more and more people up so that they can see through it and not participate. And it is, you know, we are in a race, and more and more people are waking up very quickly to this stuff, to, you know, the history of the trivium, to the logical fallacies, to the, you know, and we haven't even gotten into yet how the psychedelic movement was usurped, essentially, to put it very simply, and used for mind control as well. And they use this whole positive thinking aspect surrounding around the psychedelics. Yeah, I guess I did talk about that, to control and herd the people in the direction they want without critical or balanced thinking. And so this is entirely done through fallacious logic and a misuse of the trivium. And essentially the only way you can protect yourself from this stuff is to study it, to go out and study grammar, logic, and rhetoric as you should have learned in grammar school, right?
I don't know why people send their children to school. I mean, did they ever go to school themselves? Do they know what it's like there? And it's even worse now than it was in the day.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, and people that really want to get into how the compulsory education system is completely corrupt, they should study John Taylor Gatto. He's written a number of books, and some partners at Tragedy and Hope and I did last year. We put out a five-part interview series, and then we all put out on top of the five-hour interview with Gatto, we did a 15-minute commentary dispersed throughout the entire talk so that people can follow along with the research and understand the depth and scope of it all.
And also, I'd like to advise people, repetition is absolutely crucial for this type of very highbrow information. It is impossible to absorb it all in one show. So if you're listening to this show and you don't understand it, you're going to have to listen to it a few times again. We'll be right back after the break.
Look at me driving and I won't stop. And it feels so good to be alive and on top. My reach is global, my tower secure, my cause is noble, my power is pure. I can hand out a million vaccinations, I'll let them all die in exasperation, have them all healed.
healed from the lacerations. Have them all killed by assassination. I can make anybody go to prison.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're broadcasting live 5 days a week on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. At the moment, it's a bit weird with the time zone change thingies because New Zealand's changed time zone, but I don't think Australia has. So if you're in New Zealand, it's 11 a.m. till 1 p.m. Until further notice, because when the U.S. switches over to daylight savings, and I don't know when that is, we will be midday till 2 p.m. New Zealand local time daily. So that's just a little bit of info for you. My very special guest and connoisseur of shrooms, as it were, in a way, Jan Irvin from Gnostic Media.
Well, you wouldn't know that from all of the attacks against me lately that I've ever consumed them.
Well, I would say that when it's in World War II, I believe there's a quote. You're familiar with the Lancaster bombers that took off from Britain and went bombing missions down in Germany. And they had a saying, when flak artillery is firing at you, it explodes all around you in these black puffs of smoke. And the saying was, if you're copping the flak, you're over the target.
Yeah, no kidding, huh? To say the least, and you know, the flak has been, you know, they've been hitting me full on for the last month. There were some minor attacks when I put out my Wasson article on May 13, but the real attack started when I began to expose Terrence McKenna, and you know, I used to be a huge fan of Terrence McKenna, and in fact, from 2001 to 2004, I put out on the internet about 70 hours worth of the Terrence McKenna archives that are available out there today. And so, you know, like I was saying earlier, just following the path of research, and I started fact-checking things and looking into his background and into his connections and into some of the things that he was promoting. And that led me into researching Aldous Huxley's background and all this stuff. But, you know, the Huxley family, Aldous's grandfather, Sir Thomas Henry Huxley, actually was called Charles Darwin's bulldog. And they worked together and they were close friends. And in fact, Aldous Huxley started a club called the X Club. And X is, you know, biblical for the perfect man. And in Ezekiel, we see that X is put upon the men who are to be saved, and everyone else without the X is to be exterminated. So here we have Thomas Henry Huxley starting this X Club to promote Darwin's theories. And what he did was he and eight professors at major universities formed this X Club, and then they dispensated Darwin's theories from there. And the obviously, as it points to Ezekiel, the ultimate agenda behind it was promoting eugenics. And let me just pull up the quote here from Ezekiel, and it's Ezekiel 9:6, slay utterly old and young, both maids and little children and women, but come not near any man upon whom is the mark, and begin at my sanctuary. Then they began at the ancient men which were before the house. And so, and as I mentioned in the article, that the most updated version, the irony is twofold, that Huxley and Darwin are using a biblical reference for the club in which they promote Darwin's theories, and two, their plan for eugenics is laid bare. And, you know, so, you know, and then what happens is it skips a generation, and then you have Aldous Huxley and Julian Huxley pick it up from there. Julian Huxley founds UNESCO. He writes like 11 books on eugenics, humanism, transhumanism, all of this stuff. Actually dispensated through Aldous Huxley's books like Brave New World and Island and this stuff. And then Aldous Huxley helps found the Esalen Institute up in Northern California. And then from there, you know, all of this stuff is dispensated out into the public. The using psychedelics or entheogens for enlightenment, for evolution, a la Terrence McKenna, who worked at Esalen, and, you know, McKenna admits all of his ties to the Huxley family. We have Terrence McKenna talks like Techno-Pagans at History's End, which is all about transhumanism. Of course, Julian Huxley was the first to ever publish on transhumanism. And then Julian Huxley also published on humanism and feminism and all of this other stuff. You know, and for those of you out there who still believe in feminism, I recommend searching YouTube and watching everything from this woman, Karen, Girl Writes What? And I've also had her on my podcast recently, but she exposes the entire agenda behind the feminist movement to destroy the, you know, the family unit, to cause more us and them mentality between men and women. And she exposes how, you know, the so-called patriarchal system that the feminists sell is actually a complete misrepresentation of history. But she's got many dozens of videos on YouTube as well that expose a lot of this stuff, and it's very well researched. But, you know, so McKenna was out there selling this stuff. And in fact, here's a quote from Terrence McKenna from his talk in Maui in 1994, Speaking the Unspeakable. And, you know, and the whole quote is up there, but I'll just read a couple of the snippets out of it. And a lot of people think that they support this idea, but I recommend you search and watch Karen of Girl Writes What before you thoughtlessly buy into what Terrence is saying here. So this is the key points excerpted out of the, you know, otherwise it would be a couple of minutes to read the whole thing for you, but it's up on my website for all to read there. He says, the mushroom said, pause, but since you brought it up, I would be very interested in seeing a set of social policies, tax incentives, medical policies, insurance policies put in place to limit male birth. This is the way to feminize the human race. I am a feminist. As a humanist, I advocate a reduction in male birth. Terrence McKenna. And like I said, if you go into Julian Huxley's background, who was promoting humanism and founded transhumanism and was promoting all of these ideas, and you see Aldous Huxley promoting all of these ideas of, you know, through Brave New World and stuff, controlling the population through drugs and this idea of enlightenment through drugs. Well, you see, this is exactly the larger agenda that McKenna is selling, whether or not he is directly aware of it.
Well, that's how the system works so well, is having unwitting dupes and patsies.
Exactly. You know, and you dress up whatever you're selling in 70 or 80 or 90% truth, and you hide 10% BS in there, and you don't show people how to critical think, how to ask who, what, where, when, why, and how, and filter out the logical fallacies. You don't explain to them, hey, you know, this is an ad hominem attack. You know, Vincent, you're an a New Zealander. You're a Kiwi. Anything that you say is completely BS. I can't believe anything out of your mouth. That's an ad hominem attack. They don't say,
But it's true, though.
Well, this is the it is true, but that doesn't bear anything on the work that you put forward, right? I mean, you can be a homosexual or a Republican or a, you know, a Whig party or whatever the heck, and that bears nothing on the particular information that you're presenting at any given time. You have to go point by point each time and check the information on its own merit. And so essentially what these elitists have done is, you know, one of the key ways that the trivium is used for mind control is just to switch the order of it. All they do is they get people to put the why before who, what, where, when. So let's say you're a computer, right? A computer has input, processing, and output. So all they're doing is they're getting people to put their processing before their input. Well, if you're putting processing first, what are you processing?
It's garbage in, garbage out, like a climate change model.
Well, there's nothing there, so then you have to fill it in and you make it up, right? Or you appeal to some authority. That is the key sickness in our society, is just tricking people to put the why before who, what, where, and when. That is how the whole damned operation works, folks. Just switch the order. Whenever information comes in, ask who, what, where, when, before you determine why and explain how to someone else. If you can do that, if you can go who, what, where, when, and then go out and check that information, like, you know, if you hear something from some authority, if you spend 10 minutes checking it, it could save you a lifetime of false beliefs.
most of us have already lived half a lifetime of false belief and are just now waking up. It's a trauma to go through.
Well, sure. You know, and this is the trick, you know, is, you know, the whole authority thing, the whole appeal to authority, the ad verecundium fallacy, that is government. Okay, so once you begin to study logic and the trivium, and people say, well, logic doesn't work. Well, the trivium is not just logic. Again, it's grammar, logic, and rhetoric. It acts as sort of like a corkscrew so that when any new information comes in, you have a systematic way to go back and check it with previous information that's come in through your five senses. You know, and so, of course, what they've also done is they've, you know, created this whole, from Immanuel Kant and David Hume forward into influencing quantum physics. They sell this entire idea that you can't really find any truth from your five senses. And you have to ask yourself, who does that benefit?
You know, Lally, look at it. Who does it benefit? Well, it benefits all the people that are trying to pull the wool over your eyes and stab you
exactly.
And then roast you on a rotator
split. Bono, who benefits?
Okay, look at it this way, ladies and gentlemen. If you've got a whole bunch of cows and things like that, you don't run after them and yell and scream and go, ah! No. You just lead them quietly into the slaughterhouse. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on American
Freedom
Radio.
When we come back, I'll read you something from Huxley.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Huxley is a must, isn't it? We'll be right back in just a few minutes, ladies and gentlemen. Don't you go changing. Jan Ervin, GnosticMedia.com. See you in a few seconds.
Delete the virus, alert the masses.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It is the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, 5 till 7 Central, 5 days a week. My very special and immaculately polished guest, Jan Ervin, joins us now for the second hour. Jan, welcome back.
Thank you, sir.
Have you been enjoying yourself so far?
Oh, I'm doing my best considering my conditions and trying there for a minute. I felt like I was going back into a fever, but I'm doing all right now.
Mm-hmm. It seems we're all holding back and trying to make good of a bad condition, aren't we?
Yeah, sure. On several levels right now.
Mm-hmm. And this is something I've noticed. I was listening to the ad over the break about the pseudo-capitalists of Wall Street and the military-industrial complex cheering on the printing of the currency, but that the number of people who care is growing exponentially. And I don't know if you've ever visited Alexa.com, have you, Jan?
I don't recall.
It's the global kind of internet ranking system, so you can go in and put any website.
Oh, yes. Okay, Alexis, yes, I just, you know, your Kiwi accent there for a second, or Alexia.
My bad.
I'm on it now, looking at my own website. How's that?
And what I find is you can start comparing yourself to other alternative right media or other alternative left media. And you'll find that you're beating them out every single time. I've discovered this with many truther websites and my friends' websites as well are still beating out the controlled alternative media.
They're still beating out what?
They're still beating out the controlled right and controlled left, quote-unquote, alternative media.
Yeah. The alternative sources are online. What about the mainstream, though? That's what we've got to hit.
That's true, and I think that the mainstream media outlets are small in number and large in audience, whereas we are large in number and moderate in audience. So I think if you think of all the alternative websites and you put them together, I would say we are beating the freaking pants off them hands down.
Interesting. You're talking about Truth Frequency, American Freedom Radio, or what?
No, I'm talking about American Freedom Radio, RBN, GCN, Coast to Coast, and there's a wide spectrum of alternative media outlets, radio stations, and things like that.
Yeah, and I would say some of those are heavily involved in the disinformation as well.
This is true. But even the disinformation that's put out by the truth movement is still much better information than you get out of the mainstream media.
Yeah, I will agree with that. But there's still enough misleading information to keep people focused on the wrong target. Like, for instance, the Wall Street protesters and these guys that have been out there, if they studied Clint Richardson's research on the CAFR comprehensive annual financial reports on how that stuff works, and it's not just here in the U.S., it's all over the world. If they studied that information, they would be protesting every city hall in America and not Wall Street. You know, Wall Street is at the other end of it, not at the cause of the issue, which is that our city, county, state governments own 85% of Wall Street.
I feel that the whole free market ideology can work in things that don't involve markets. For example, the trafficking of a commodity like information, and people are competing against each other. And naturally, those who are providing the best information regularly with high quality are the ones who, in general, wind up getting the hit. So the system works. The difficulty is we have people who, as you've so poignantly stated, go directly to the why and do not ask first the what, where,
sure,
how.
Sure, well, they'll see a conspiracy and they'll be like, oh, well, that's a conspiracy theory. And, you know, they'll use an appeal to ridicule. That's wrong because, and that's the only answer. You know, and it's completely the entire brainwashing through the compulsory education system to get people to react like that to information, because, you know, it's easier for them to react like that than it is for them to admit that they might have been fooled, which is unfortunate because, you know, it takes a lot of, you know, from people to be honest with themselves and own up to this sort of thing. And some people's egos are just so huge to admit that they could have ever been fooled. But guess what, folks? Every single one of us has been fooled at one time or another. And not just on one level, but on many. And government isn't just one. Religion isn't just one. I mean, these are all stacked up on top of each other. And when you begin to apply the trivium and the logical fallacies, just the basics of the trivium that we should have learned by eighth grade reveal how the entire system works. And that's why they got rid of the trivium in the early 1900s and they brought in the compulsory government education, because the trivium stood in between world government and their agenda and our autonomy. You know, I mean, they're on the opposite side. So as long as we have the trivium, we remain autonomous. And people will say, well, what about the environment and all of these things that we need to take care of? Well, if you look at it, you know, it's the elites and the, you know, who have brought us planned obsolescence and Edward Bernays and Madison Avenue and all of their marketing and selling of these ideas. It's the elites, the very people that we've been investigating on this stuff, who have caused these very problems that they then turn and blame us for. The banning of industrial hemp, for instance, in most countries, which is completely absurd. And then, you know, I think it was New Zealand that was supposed to have a hemp fuel company in full production like 2 years ago, and I think that was stamped out. And they had actually gotten permission to run from the New Zealand government and had done all of the studies and everything and showed the yields per hectare were going to be much higher than originally suspected. And they were ready to go, and then all of a sudden, nothing. So obviously somebody came along and shut that down, because when you have things like industrial hemp and things that promote autonomy and not, don't keep us tied to this, corporate government tit, well, they immediately stamp it out.
Well, I was thinking about this yesterday. I love getting in front of protests because I've got a 100-watt megaphone now given to me by another protester. And I wanted to ask them this question. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, do any of you think that you're currently under mind control? you know, nobody will raise their hand. And I go, okay, I'll ask you another question. Is anyone here currently under the rule of their government? Yeah, everybody raised their hand. Okay. Now, who knows what the word government means? Govern, meaning control, and meant, meaning mind.
Right. You know, and I when I mention this, people constantly come up and will say, you know, well, meant is just the suffix, like cement or something like this, you know, but from Middle English forward, and, you know, and you can find it in other languages as well, the ment mente from Latin, meaning mind. And, you know, it's ironic because that is exactly, when you use that description, it fits exactly what government is for, right? And then when you change that, the ment or mente at the end to a suffix, suddenly the word doesn't describe what it is, and it actually hides it, you know? So to me, that's a bunch of sophist trickery, because when the word perfectly describes what government is, and when you realize, you know, like I said, study Larken Rose's research, and that's L-A-R-K-E-N, rose.com. And when you research his work, you know, he's the leading thinker out there exposing how government is a religion. He's got a very good book, The Most Dangerous Superstition. Another book that is a novel called The Iron Web. He's got one or two other books as well. But, you know, this is the information that they don't want you to know how to think and how it, you know, the trivium doesn't tell you what to think. It tells you how to think and how to check information and how to spot predators, you know, people that are trying to take advantage of you and manipulate you. And so that, coupled with you know, all of these other concepts, you know, understanding that government is a religion and understanding that it's this belief in this religion of government that continually empowers the elite. And as soon as you stop believing in that religion, you completely disempower them. It is your belief in their religion that empowers them. And so, folks, all you have to do is just turn off that belief. You sever that connection. They no longer have power over you. And more people that wake up, guess what? One day they're going to be left completely powerless and exposed and vulnerable. And because they don't produce anything and they're just cancers on society, they're going to fall off and die. Drop from the vine. I should say they'll drop from the vine, or the branch will drop off the tree and it'll drop dead, you know?
Truth is the ultimate way to prune off the dead wood.
Indeed it is.
And I wanted to mention as well that this dynamic that we have here, I remember I was at a public meeting once, and this aficionado of the government was trying to tell the crowd how cutting all their education spending was absolutely necessary because of the tough economic times, and the whole crowd wasn't having any of it, and he lost all his power because everything he said was drowned out by boos.
Well, the thing is, too, is that when you get in and study Clint Richardson and Walter Burian's work, and you see how what the government does is they take your tax money and then they invested in these massive funds all over the world. And they essentially siphon all of the money out of the wealthier countries into the poorer countries. But, you know, for instance, the state of California, you know, the governor was, you know, we're $16 billion in debt and we're just going to have to shut down all of these programs. You know, and I've met Jerry Brown, and the guy is just a complete, oh, my goodness. But anyway, not to use an ad hominem against the guy, but woof. So anyway, you know, it's if you, and I just lost my train of thought there, I apologize, but the entire idea, though, is, you know, Jerry Brown was hiding behind this $16 billion, and meanwhile, my friend Clint Richardson exposed that the government, in fact, had another, they were hiding $586 billion in these funds.
So, and of course, these funds were all supposedly reserved for retirement. You know, it could pay off the entire debt 35 times over. And they're old. But, you know, the thing is if all of these, you know, the tax money that's been hidden in these funds, all of this investment money was returned to the, you know, to investment in, into the public, then you would never need taxes ever again for anything. You know, and going back to the, you know, the voluntary society and who, how would all of this stuff get funded? Well, that's exactly how it would get funded, or one of the ways, you know, but, well, you know, and we would have corporatocracy as well, because, you know, obviously the corporation can only exist by belief in government. You know, a corporation is a straw man. It's a belief in a false entity. It's, yeah, a, you know, the fallacy of the straw man.
That's why they're so irresponsible.
Sure. You know, it's, well, it's, you know, see, that's the whole idea, is by them creating this entity or this imaginary, none of the top people within the corporation need take responsibility for their actions, right? They have a buffer there to protect them, and so then they can go around and act like the psychopaths that they are, just like, you know, government. You know, in government, you know, you cannot...
If we could liken it to playing a game of Grand Theft Auto, when you've got this protective bubble of being in an imaginary world, and you can go out and kill all these people and it means nothing.
Sure, you know, and it's imaginary belief in the religion of government, right? You know, it's these guys that put on this, you know, their costumes, their badge, their funny little hats, their billy clubs, the parking meter, the woman at the courthouse, the judge that wears the black dress behind the Masonic counter and all of that, you know, the Masonic bench. And, you know, he directs the flow of the currency between the banks and all of this kind of crap. You know, it's just all of these double standard terms and fallacies of equivocation. You know, an equivocation is when a word is used simultaneously to mean two different things, and unless you spot those two different meanings, they'll use it against you to manipulate you, right? So, you know, these are all different tactics that the, you know, the government and corporate media use to control us. And just, you know, if you were so lazy and you just didn't want to study the trivia, you know, take, and on the Trivium Education website, there's a printout on one page where you can download a little pocket thing of the fallacies to carry around in your pocket, so that, you know, just pull this thing out and practice it for, you know, a minute every day. And if you do that for 2 weeks or a month, you'll have most of the fallacies memorized, or at least the key ones. And you'll be protected from most of the BS coming out at you. Now, people knew ways to lie and trick and manipulate. But, you know, and there are probably more than 200 fallacies. But if you get a solid knowledge of the core 20, you'll be fairly well protected.
I think that that's what we're really searching for. All of us in the truth movement are looking for either A1, an overall solution to this, or B2, a coping mechanism slash methodology for living in this.
Sure. Well, look a minute. What did you just say there? You said the truth movement. Okay.
Hold on.
Now let's just review this and think about it, because what is the truth movement? If the truth movement has not gathered and incorporated a systematic method for removing fallacies. See, the word fallacy comes from the Latin fallare, to lie. And all of these different fallacies that they use against us are different ways to lie and control people. And you know, if you don't know the fallacies, you have no way to filter them out of your own thoughts, right? And so this is actually key in not only spotting the lies coming at you, but also filtering the lies out of your own head, right? And so what is truth but the absence of lies or fallacies? So how does the truth movement become a real truth movement, this type of information?
I think it's a very poignant question, and I think we should probably attempt to answer that after the break, don't you think, Jan? Because it bears looking upon, because a lot of A lot of people think about it as like the 9/11 half-truth movement sometimes. You know what I'm saying? Not looking at the whole equation.
Well, that's why fallacies are so important.
Indeed. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen.
We got to change the way we see the problem if we're gonna fix this place. My living soul don't care about the color of your face.
Welcome back.
Respect our right to live here on the land.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to New Zealand's only 5 day a week Truther Talk radio show. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. I'm not being arrogant, it's the truth. And it's verifiable using the trivium.
Well, from henceforth, wherever you started using it, right?
Well, and you've given me such poise here, Jan, with this trivium here, because I have actually kind of been very flippant, I would actually say even lazy, with this radio show, inviting anybody on, whatever, don't even look at their website, don't do the research. Today I started to do something different, and I listened to an interview with you, I looked through your website, and did more research on any guests that I've done on the show to date, right? And I found it's actually improved it a bit, because it takes away some of the guesswork, and it gives a certainty. Yes. Now, upon certainty, you can base strong actions, and with uncertainty, the best thing to do is not act. And I've been feeling very uncertain about things because I didn't know about the trivium and how to verify things and how to separate what is fact, what is fiction, what matters, and how much my actions really, truly have an effect. No matter how positive or negative my attitude is, my actions trump those.
And now you know why I always read the books and everything of the people that I have on my show. As you know, that is doing your grammar so that you have a clear understanding of their work. And a lot of times, you know, if I am doing research on somebody and I find that, this is a bad way. And certainly people have gotten past me and fooled me. But, you know, the whole idea is to filter them out. And, you know, it's just not my own practice to let everybody in and let the audience figure it out. Because when you send mental viruses downstream, then you're the source of that problem from everybody downline from you. And, you know, if you send out a lie and a whole bunch of people believe in it, not only have you wasted your time, but you've wasted every single person's time who's involved in that belief downline from you. So anything that we can do to check ourselves and the information before we send it downstream is important. And this is why grammar always goes first, that who, what, where, when, why. Who is this person? What are they doing? What are they selling? Why are they selling it? When, you know, what's going on with this situation? Then, and when we look at the person's information by knowing logic and the fallacies, then we can go through and spot anything, you know, and of course we're human, so we're still going to make mistakes. So that's why there's the fallacist fallacy, and you're always aware of that. So even if you spot a fallacy, you still check the information. You know, for instance, let's say, the boy who cries wolf, or the guy on top of the hill who's always causing trouble in the village, he's constantly running down the hill and screaming, hey, you know, the army on the other side is coming to kill us all, you know, and 9 times out of 10, the guy's just messing with the townspeople, right? You know, and people are just like, oh, you know, like the boy who cried, well, he's just messing with us. You know, fool me once, fool me twice. I'm not going to look. So one day, the enemy army really is coming, and the village idiot is up there, and he comes down screaming, hey, man, using all this appeal to fear and everything, just like the previous times, only this time it's real, you know. So the difference is, you know, even if somebody is selling 95% BS, just by using a little bit of checking, we can take the 5% that might be truth, and it might save our lives. So, you know, we go up and we stick our heads up over the hill and we look and we go, oh, crap, the enemy army is coming. Hey, everybody, get your shields, your weapons, your guns, your swords, whatever the case may be. Let's buckle up and protect ourselves. And this may be, you know, what saves your life or whatever. So, you know, just like I said, just because you spot a fallacy or whatever, you don't, you know, dismiss it. You still want to check into it. And you don't kill the messenger. You don't poison the well. You don't commit these types of fallacies against people. You know, if somebody writes a book on one subject that is wrong or ends up getting proved wrong, it doesn't mean that anything they ever produce henceforth is also wrong.
I was thinking this. How exactly to run an information source that's totally credible and has a strong filtering process so that people can 100% implicitly trust your information?
Well, and you know, I
found the key is to pay a heck of a lot more attention and do more preparation and more fact checking before you go ahead into it. And essentially,
you can never be 100%. I don't think, but you know, you can, you know, like I said earlier, people will always find new ways to lie and trick people, but you can filter out the biggest ones, the main ones. Most of the time you can catch on to them, but you have to be very careful in, you know, appealing to your authority. The best way to do it is to spread the information on exactly how the Trivium works so that, you know, you do your best to filter that information before you send it downstream, but you also empower everybody with the tools that you're using and you show them exactly how it works so that they're on the same page with you and checking the information. You know, when they're not on the same page with you, it's these people that refuse to read something before they judge it, right? Like a couple few weeks ago, this guy Simon Powell went on Red Ice Radio out of Sweden and did this 25-minute screed against my work, and he had never studied any of my work. So all he did was reveal himself as completely 100% ignorant on public radio for 25 minutes. I mean, you know, it's just, and if he ever wakes up to the sheer amount of lies and BS that he told, and of course he got a lot of emails and attacks for doing that. And so if he ever goes and reads my work and actually studies it, then he's going to have to own up to all of these lies that he sold, right? And
Mark Twain said that when an honest man finds out that he is wrong, he will either cease to be wrong or cease to be honest.
Exactly right. And, you know, and it's like, you know, this guy, Simon Powell, the first sentence of his book starts off with all these quotes of Einstein, you know, and it's ironic because Einstein is quoted as saying, as I put on the very first page of my Holy Mushroom book that Simon didn't read, condemnation without investigation is the height of ignorance. Right. So this is the key theme. Again, it's putting your grammar, your who, what, where, and when before your why. Okay, so it's, you know, you don't condemn something until you've spent a few minutes looking at it. You know, once you know the fallacies, if somebody is using an appeal to ridicule, ah, ha, 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 that's a conspiracy theory, or, you know, an ad hominem, you're a conspiracy theorist, or, you know, an appeal to belief. Oh, do you really believe that these people would do something like that? Do you think that that is really sane? Are you just, you know, woo-hoo? You know, so when you see people using these types of tactics, these are fallacies, they're lies, and that should automatically trigger you to look into that information past this smokescreen, right?
When you're actually in a conversation with these people and it's a real back and forth in a debate, if you've got the truth on their side and they've got nothing, all you need to do is just question what they've got. And
well, sure. And you know, and you can point out, and you can point out the fallacies too. And what's interesting is, you know, people will often call you a snob or an elite or some other fallacy if you explain the fallacies in Latin terms, just for knowing the Latin definitions, which it helps you to understand and spot the lies when you use Latin. So obviously, you know, there's a trick to rhetoric. I tend to prefer the hard approach. Others tend to prefer a softer approach with people, like, You know, if, you know, I'll explain to somebody, you know, just read the research and go through the citations and show me point by point how it's wrong. Don't just say, oh, that's wrong because ha, 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 ha. And then when I ignore their comments, then they say, oh, well, you're not taking feedback. It's like, well, you didn't even study the work. How do you even know my work to give feedback on it? What possible value could you give to something that you didn't spend the 5 or 10 minutes to look at first? Your response, your quote-unquote feedback is entirely emotional and completely 100% irrelevant to anything I wrote. You know, and it's like in my Gordon Wasson piece that I wrote on, you know, the secret history of magic mushrooms and his involvement with the CIA and CFR. Well, interestingly, I got all of these attacks from these people that were, you know, well, you know, you're contradicting all of your old work and, you know, so what, you know, everything that you put out before is now invalid because now you're saying that, you know, the MK Ultra is still active. These were in irrelevant points. But what people failed to notice because they didn't even bother to read the paper was that it was dedicated to the mushrooms in the, you know, in the conclusion of the Wasson paper. And so they completely just omitted that. You know, they don't even see, you know, it's, you know, what they think is that if I'm exposing how the psychedelics have been misused and usurped to fool us, they think, or they jump to the conclusion that I'm saying that entheogens don't have value. So, you know, there's a total disconnect there. These are two separate issues here. And so, you know, just because I'm pointing out that people with ill intentions can misuse them and fool you with them and get you into all of these new age positive thinking stuff so that you're not balanced, that is a completely different issue than saying, you know, yes, you know, what I am saying, which is, yes, they do have value, but use them in tandem with the trivium so that you have a systematic way to check the information that you're going through. And, you know, in all honesty, to me, the proper application of the trivium is the same as the full-blown psychedelic experience.
Mm-hmm. In other words, you see through the illusion that's put in front of you.
Exactly. And so, let me make a point here. So, you know, when you have that psychedelic experience, that full-blown out-of-body experience where you can, you know, you come down the next day and you're coming down and you say, I just need to hang on to all of this so that I can remember it all and see it and all of the clarity that I had here so that I can bring that back into my daily life. And then you wake up the next morning and you've forgotten the whole thing, right? Or, you know, the key, you know, a lot of the main stuff and how you did it. Well, what I find is that the trivium and the quadrivium together is exactly that. You know, so it's like when you're in that clarity of the experience and then you come back and you lose it all, it's because we go back into our fallacious ego minds and believing in all of the fallacies and stuff that we follow rather than having that certainty and clarity that we have through the entheogenic experience. And then, as I mentioned earlier, that all ties into the Kabbalah and everything. So if you don't think that there's a spirituality tied into this stuff, then go out and research it. The trick is that they've put, you know, they've trivialized the trivium. They've taken the word liberal and they've made it communist, right? And they've done all of these tricks to get people to not even look over there. And when you discover that it's the seven liberal or liberating arts that is the key behind the whole thing, grammar, logic, rhetoric, and then you have the quadrivium, which is arithmetic, geometry, music, and astronomy. Now, arithmetic is number in itself. Geometry is number in space. Music is number in time. Astronomy is number in space and time. So this, all of these together gives you a systematic way to go through and check things out in reality. The mathematics, the measurements, the all of this different stuff that they don't want us to think that we have the ability to do, and then put these quantum physics ideas in front of us. You know, and then this goes into the whole Crowleyan do what thou wilt stuff. You know, there is no right and wrong. And then we're just free to just do whatever we feel like that violates natural law. You know, and for those interested in studying natural law, I recommend they study Mark Passio's research at What on Earth is Happening, as he breaks down all of that and shows how natural law is key. You know, so these people that the Kantians that promote this stuff, it's all about, and the Crowleyans, et cetera, it's all about this do what thou wilt, and there is no good or bad. There is no violation of natural law. And then these people have what they think is justification for going around and doing whatever evil to others that they feel like doing because they're lesser than them, rather than raising people up. You know, see, I could take the Trivium and I could start some massive cult movement and I can control hundreds of thousands of people at a time with it. Or I could give it to everybody and level the playing field so that nobody can do that, you see. And so that's the difference in the approach. When somebody uses something for bad, for the manipulation of others versus the empowerment of others. And, you know, to our knowledge, this is the first time that the Trivium has ever been dispensated out to the masses in this way to level the playing field against the elite.
Well, it must be done. And the people who question it are very archetypal and they're very easy to slap down because they're so predictable and inferior. It is like a creation thinking it's better than its creator.
Well, you know, and what happens is these people get so caught up in their fallacious thinking and not even willing to look at it that, you know, you can predict every single one of their arguments before they ever make them.
That's entirely correct. And this is what I don't understand about a lot of people who try to be in this movement. You know that morons are going to give you stupid, moronic answers. Then why don't you come up with some preset retorts, baby? We'll be right back after the break.
Alone against your mad, deadly, worldwide, conspiratorial, gangster, computer god communism with wall-to-wall, deadly gangster protection, lifelong sworn conspirators, murder incorporated, organized crime, the police and judges, deadly, sneak parodies, puppets, gangsters, using all the...
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show. The most cackle-generating 2 hours in conspiracy, scare the frick out of you with the Truth Talk Radio. A very special guest, Jan Irvin. We've only got one segment left. Are there any topics that you kind of don't normally go into on air because people get real judgmental and angry about it? Or is it just a free-for-all? Because you got the Trivium to protect your ass?
Well, I mean, usually I don't hold off from any topic, but, you know, there's some that I'll shy away from. You know, I think that the whole Zionism issue is a key issue that, you know, gets so involved in politics and our politicians just blindly supporting anything that Israel does. And, you know, recently California passed a law that it was illegal to say anything against Israel. So, I mean, even reporting the truth about the state of affairs and politics in Israel, as if that was illegal about any other country, is somehow illegal. So, I mean, when you make something illegal to talk about, it's obviously that there's something there to hide and to cover up. I mean, you don't hide things, you don't occult things if you're being honest and upfront. And so... You know, I think that is something that needs more attention in a lot of people's eyes. I think Joe Atwell's research, whom you had on recently, his research needs a lot more attention. And I think if people study that and the Trivium and also the Quadrivium and the higher arts, they'll be able to, you know, protect themselves from a lot of this stuff and just completely neutralize it. And like I said earlier, once we neutralize by being able to recognize the fallacies and stop believing in the false beliefs and religions and government, then, you know, it just completely disempowers them. So, you know, it's reaching out one mind at a time. It's empowering them with critical thinking, who, what, where, when, why, and how of the ancient classical Trivium and Quadrivium. And I should mention, most of the ancient philosophy is written based on the, you know, around this Trivium and Quadrivium too. And essentially, the trick is that the elites create their separate layer of understanding in this stuff by the masses not having the trivium. You know, that's why it was the seven liberating arts. You had the mechanical and servile arts that were taught to the general masses and slave class, and then you had the liberal or liberating arts that were taught to the upper class. And still today, the trivium and quadrivium are taught in the Ivy League schools, although it must be with some irrational twist because these people come out of there still, using it all for sophist power, and then, they intermix it with Kant and this stuff about, there is
I'm
no
I'm unfamiliar with the words sophist and Kant.
Right. Well, sophist, it comes from, the sophist, Sophia is the word wisdom or knowledge, and the sophists were the ones who there were two groups of sophists in ancient days. Okay, they were, and let me just check this really quick to make sure that I get it right. There were those who worshipped Demosthenes and those who worshipped Isocrates. Now, Isocrates, he was the one who tried to expose it all for good, right? And then Demosthenes, yeah, here we go. Yes, the two branches are Isocrates versus Demosthenes. And then Demosthenes, he dies in 322. And, so part of the 322 skull and bones, and I think Marty Lee has some new research that goes into some of the mathematical basis of that as well. But this 322 is also the year that Demosthenes died. And, of course, he being the king sophist and, just arguing to win and no care for wrong or right, well, that's what this is all based on, right? So it all goes back to Demosthenes and these ancient thinkers. So having an understanding in the trivium and then beginning to understand the ancient philosophers, et cetera, is really key in understanding how these systems work. And just, get yourself oriented with the trivium first above all else, because then you'll be able to cut through all of the other crud in half the time. When you can when you can see all of the lies and the fallacies, it enables your mind to just slice right through the stuff much more quickly and fact check things, half, maybe even a tenth the time that it normally would. So,
like, have you ever looked at a raft of movies? Like, you've gone to the movie theater and you're wondering which movie you'll want to watch and stuff like that. And you can tell just by looking at the poster which of these are going to be incredibly lame that you don't want to see. Is that what we're kind of talking about here?
Well,
except it's information.
I mean, you've still got to be careful of the old adage, don't judge a book by its cover, right? You would need to do more grammar on that. At least spend a couple of minutes reading a wide array of positive and negative reviews, and that way at least you've done some grammar on it, and you're at least getting other people's feedback on it. It's not your own direct five sense knowledge, but by incorporating enough people's five sense knowledge, you can get the gist that way if it's something that you want to follow through with. If you go to Amazon and you're looking up a book, usually I start with the negative reviews first, and I look at the logic of the person's ability, writing that review. If their logic is just completely erratic and fallacious, and they're using ad hominem attacks, and it's all about their Christian beliefs or this or that, well, then I know this person is lying about that work. If the review is going point by point and showing, well, he's wrong here because of this, he's wrong there because of this, here's the citation, this way I can go through and I can fact check what that reviewer is saying, and I can say, oh, yeah, well, this person is either correct or completely full of what. And so, this way, we can have a good foundation or understanding. But even then, if you're doing research on a topic, even if somebody is, again, 95% full of crud, that if you go through and read it or study it yourself regardless, you may get a little nugget out of it that helps you on your own progress.
This is true. And I choose to believe everything I know to be true is wrong, but I look for the evidence to prove that I'm right.
Instead of having that approach, when you have the trivium, and that is the foundation when you basically start out and you're first getting the trivium is, let's say, 85% of everything I know is complete BS. And that's, the percentage, essentially. It's, in fact, what most people believe is wrong. A million Frenchmen are wrong. And so, and just starting from this and then removing the fallacies from our own thoughts, then we start catching our own beliefs. We can, I need to fact check this belief, and you can validate and go through and then change that whole percentage so that eventually you're very confident in the knowledge that you hold to. And anything that you're not confident in, that you haven't gone and fact check yourself, you very easily let go of. It's like I can pick up a glass and I can tap on it and I can, sniff what's in it and look at it and feel it and get all of this 5-cent stuff on it. And I can set it down and not be emotionally attached to that glass, right? And so that is really the whole idea. It's, whenever you take in an idea, you pick it up, you analyze it, you compare it, filter it through all of the logical fallacies, your knowledge database, see what more knowledge needs to be gathered on it. And then once you've verified it, you either keep it or you toss it and you don't stay attached to it. It's just like that. And once we realize that we have false beliefs, if we just allow our, egos to rest and just, disconnect, then we can let the information go and just accept that, it's okay. We've all been fooled. We are all the slave class. And once we realize, and one of these days, I own slavesanonymous.com, and one of these days I'll do something with it, right? But once people can just accept that they're a slave, this is going to be the first step in healing their hearts and minds.
It's so funny you should say that. Because just yesterday, I was explaining to a mate of mine that I'm a slave. He says, no, you're not. You're doing all this. No. I'm a slave, man. I still have to work to survive. I don't have any real freedom. It can be taken away from any minute, just like any ordinary slave on a frickin' plantation, man. Sure. And until we're free, entirely free.
Don't pay your taxes,
free,
see what happens.
Yeah, exactly. You're not free. You have the illusion of it.
Yeah. And the entire voting mechanism is there so that you once a year or once every couple of years walk into this booth and you think that you've done your civic duty and that that is your illusion of freedom, that one little vote right there. And the word democracy itself is a fallacy of equivocation, because the word democracy comes from demo, which means mob, and crassy, which is rule, okay? So it's mob rule, or rule by the mob. So, what you have here is, the information that the mob is fed without the trivium is easily manipulated, so you can easily pull the strings of the mob rule, right? You're ruling the mob, essentially. And then the other way that they twist it is that the mob is ruling the society. So it's really a double edge there on what the word means. It's a complete equivocation fallacy. So once people catch on to this idea, that democracy, is mobocracy, and that, a republic is a representative form. But even all of these are a false belief in this state and giving the power of authority to someone that you don't have in the first place, which you can't give. You can't, if you don't have the right to steal, you can't vote for somebody else to have the right to steal either.
That's right. And the reason why the education system tells us nothing really of use that we retain is because if you empower people, you can't control them, and they have to keep control of you in the classroom at the very least at that point. Jan Ervin, ladies and gentlemen, GnosticMedia.com. Thanks for coming on with us today, mate. It's been my absolute pleasure and an honor and various other nice adjectives.
Well, thank you, and that's GnosticMedia.com. And they can also check out my other website, Trivium.
You don't have time.
Trivium Education.